Welcome to the Connect Community Podcast, recorded live in Stamford, Connecticut. We're so glad to have you with us today. If you're ever in our area, come see us in person. We hope today's message inspires you and helps you live better.
All right, we are concluding our series, Blessed Today. We obviously only had 4 weeks to cover this very, very significant piece of scripture. So it's not an exhaustive explanation or exploration of this passage, but we had some important things that we were able to extract from this psalm that we confess every Sunday, Psalm 1. And just a short recap on week one, we talked about the not-to-do list. This psalm starts with a not-to-do list. It warns us against certain relationships and companionships that we should not engage with. And then week two, we talked about not wasting our winter, that sometimes things look like they're not fruitful. Sometimes the environment is tough and it causes us to withdraw our resources. But though that season is not a waiting season, it's not a season where nothing is happening, it's a season where our roots are growing. So that, yes, you somehow, you're waiting for the sun, the warmth to come, using that tree analogy, but it's not a season for you to do nothing. It's a season to strengthen your roots. And then last week, my beautiful wife, Pastor Eleni, shared a message titled Unwithered, where sometimes, even when you are planted by the season, the streams of water, it feels like you're going through things. It feels like you're in a season where you feel withered, but if we look a little bit deeper, and if we choose to maintain our relationship and our faith in God, fruit will come. And today I want to talk to you, if you're taking notes, on the subject, how to get back up when you lose it all. How to get back up when you lose it all. I want to focus most of our time today on the part of this psalm that we don't confess each Sunday, because this psalm has 6 verses and we only confess the first 3. That's intentional for 2 reasons. First, it's a really long psalm. It's a long psalm. But the psalm continues. So let's read the whole thing and then we'll start our message today. Verse 1 says, blessed is the one, I'm reading from the NIV version, who does not walk in step with the wicked or stand in the way of sinners, or sit in the companion of mockers, but whose delight is in the law of the Lord and who meditates on his law day and night. That person is like a tree planted by streams of water, which yields its fruit in its season and whose leaf does not wither. Whatever they do prospers. This is what we confess each Sunday. Here's the second part. Not so the wicked. The wicked are like chaff that the wind blows away. Therefore, the wicked will not stand in the judgment, nor sinners in the assembly of the righteous. For the Lord watches over the way of the righteous, but the way of the wicked leads to destruction. It's a strong passage, and I'll admit part of the reason why we don't confess the whole thing is because it's long, and the second part, smaller part, is because it's not very uplifting to end the confession with, the way of the wicked leads to destruction. We focus on the righteous. We want to remind you every week that if you meditate in the law of the Lord day and night, we want this to get really ingrained in your heart, that if you meditate on the law of the Lord day and night, you will be like a tree planted by streams of water, yielding fruit in its season, your leaves will not wither, and you will prosper in all that you do. But the psalmist, as we saw, continues by saying, not so the wicked. It's an observation, and it's a warning. Not only can you observe this, that this is true, if you look around, if you pay attention to people, if you pay attention to history, if you pay attention to culture, you observe that this is true. But watch out, because if you take that path as well, then your life will receive the results of those decisions and that lifestyle. You will be like the chaff that the wind blows away, Scripture says, which means you won't last. There will be no legacy. You will be gone before you even start. You will live beneath your potential. Oh, how frustrating that is. You'll be blown away with ease. I don't mean like, wow, blown away, you know. You'll be like, you're done, blown away. Because the way of the wicked leads to destruction. See, this psalm depicts two realities and two natures that make up our lives, that make up the human condition, make up a person. And this idea is threaded throughout the scriptures. You can see from the very beginning of the scriptures to the very end. See, the Bible is not random. Even though it was written by many authors and it took many hundreds of years for it to be composed, the motif found in Psalm 1 is one of the general motifs of the scripture. It's an invitation to pay attention to what we nurture. It's an invitation to connect to that which brings life, to learn from God Himself, to learn from what makes it for a healthy life. It's a warning against living apart from God. It's a warning that if we are left to our own devices, we can take this beautiful life we received as a baby, we received as a child, and we can turn it into something really, really evil and dark. And we see it from the very beginning of scriptures in Genesis. The same warning was there when God told us that we should eat from the tree of life. And we should not eat from the tree of knowledge of good and evil. God encourages the first humans in scripture to take from the tree of life, to eat from it. And if we eat from the tree of life, every other tree that we eat from will be good for nourishment, except the tree of knowledge of good and evil. He warns them against that. Because if they were to do that, death would enter their lives. We also see this idea expressed in the very last book of scriptures, the book about the end of all things, the book of Revelations. And here's the vision that the writer of the book of Revelations has about the end of all things, Christ Himself saying these words. Verse 6 in the chapter 21 of Revelation, it says, "It is done. I am the Alpha and the Omega, the beginning and the end. To the thirsty, I will give from the spring of the water of life without payment. The one who conquers will have this heritage, and I will be his God, and he will be my son. They will be my children. But as for the cowardly, the faithless, the detestable, as for murderers, the sexually immoral, sorcerers, idolaters, and all liars, their portion will be in the lake that burns with fire and sulfur, which is the second death." It's a little less subtle description. It's a little bit stronger, but it's the same theme from Genesis, and it's the same theme from Psalm 1. This shows that there is a constant about our existence that can't be ignored. There's a constant about human existence throughout time that no matter how we dress it, no matter who we try to blame for it, oh, it's the environment, oh, it's the government, oh, it's capitalism, oh, it's this and the that. No matter how we try to reallocate, this will always be true. However we try to finagle it, it'll be in vain because the truth is unchanging. It is the same warning shared in slightly different language. Eating from the tree of knowledge of good and evil in the Garden of Eden is rejecting God. It's rejecting being planted by the streams of water. And how you choose to live and how you choose to nurture life. The one who conquers in the book of Revelation will receive eternal redemption. Community with God will get to drink from that same water, from that same river. But not so the cowardly. the faithless, the detestable, the sexually immoral, the murderer, the sorcerer, the idolater. And I don't know if you catch this, if you caught this, all liars. All liars will be cut off, and their portion will be the lake of fire. What happens in the lake of fire? Can anything survive in the lake of fire? It's a picture of death. It's the end of all things. And it's strong language. It's death and life language, like in Genesis, because your life is that significant to God. It's a warning that means that you matter that much to God. Now, those who meditate, those who dwell in the law of the Lord, in other words, those who choose to live in community with God, just those who choose to have communion with God day and night, they are like trees planted by streams of water, and they are blessed. They are exceedingly happy. That's the meaning of blessed. The scripture has many examples of this duality, these two realities that we all face, this tension that we see. And a prime example is Samson. If you know the story of Samson, Samson is popularly known as a strong man with long hair, right? A guy with long hair and has the strength of a horse. He's a really strong man in the scripture. But Samson was the son promised to a couple who could not bear children. They were dealing with infertility. They were frustrated and sad and really hopeless. And then a messenger from God appears to Samson's mother. And he becomes this miracle child brought to them with the purpose and calling of God on his life to be one of the judges of the people of Israel and their enemies. And when Samson was in his mother's womb, his mother consecrated herself in the same way that Samson was supposed to consecrate himself for life. She consecrated herself by not drinking alcohol and not eating anything unclean. And Samson was dedicated as well in the same manner. See, those days, people were not faithful to God. They were not living according to the ways of the Lord, and there were idols in the land, and everything was mixed in their culture. So God made a way so that Samson could express his devotion to God. And through the messenger of God, God told Samson's mother, hey, he shall be a Nazarite. A Nazarite is a specific set of vows and lifestyle that person needs to lead. And part of the Nazarite vow was also that Samson should never cut his hair. In a culture so corrupted with ungodly practices, God made a way for Samson to say, hey, God, I affirm my commitment to you. This is how I am going to affirm my commitment to you. This is how I'm going to show the world that I'm yours. And I'm gonna commit to you each and every day. That's the love of God for us. No matter how terrible things are, no matter how terrible the environment gets, he reaches out and he makes a way for us to express our devotion to him, to live right. And so Samson grows up, he becomes a man, and it is noticeable that Samson has a weakness. Samson loves the ladies. He loves the ladies, but not only does he love the ladies, he loves the ladies from the enemy camp. He wants some of that Philistine honey. He's enamored by the Philistine women. And he's a powerful, strong man who's attracted to Philistine women. So he told his dad, let's go down there and get me myself a wife. Let's do this. And his dad got offended. He said, is there not somebody from the daughters of Abraham that you can give me some grandchildren? And Samson insisted, so they went down to the enemy camp. The Philistines were their oppressors at the time, and from day one they were out to get him. But Samson put this 7-day party together, as it was the custom, so he could court this lady that he wanted to marry. And the custom was that they would party for 7 days, and on the 7th day that would consummate the marriage. But Samson, from day one, he kind of teased them a little bit because he realized that there was tension, and he said, "Listen, I'm gonna make a bet with you. I'm gonna give you a riddle. Riddle had something to do with what he did in the past. He killed a lion, and it had to do something with that. And he said, if you solve the riddle, I'll give you 30 pieces of very expensive clothes. Basically, I'm gonna give you 30 Armani suits or Gucci, whatever, you know, like really nice, fine stuff. I'll give you 30 pieces because there were 30 of them. But if you can't solve the riddle, you have to pay me 30 with 30 of these garments." And Samson presented them with the riddle, and they couldn't solve it. They for 3 days, they tried. And then on the third day, they came to his wife-to-be, and they said, "Hey, you either get him to tell you his secret, what the riddle is, or we're going to kill you and your whole family." And so she pressed and she pressed and she pressed and she pressed. Before the seventh day, he finally told her what the secret was, and she told them, and they solved the riddle, and Samson had to find a creative way to pay them, and he got so infuriated that they threatened the woman that he wanted to marry, and that she betrayed him, that he burned all their fields. He burned their crops, and now there's this tension between the Philistines and Samson. They came to kill him with 1,000 of the enemies. And scripture says that he killed all 1,000 of them with the jawbone of a donkey. He was a strong, strong man. The power of God came upon him and to judge the enemy. But here's what happened. Every time he got involved with one of their women, they would find a way to get through to the women so that they could betray him. And he never learned his lesson. It happened again and again and again. See, Samson himself was not wicked. He was still holding on to his devotion to God, but he began to hang around wicked people, to stand in the way of sinners, to sit with mockers. And until finally, he fell in love with a woman called Delilah. Oh, Delilah. Hey there, Delilah. By now, years have passed, and Samson judged Israel for 20 years, and so we can probably assume that more than 10 years have passed, at least. And Samson has gotten used to his strength. It's just the way that he is. He's gotten confident, and in his overconfidence, he became careless. That happens sometimes, doesn't it? Samson was so used to God's strength that he began to think that it was his own strength. The vow was no longer devotion. The vow was now tradition. It's just the thing that we do, that I do. It's just a thing. It's just routine. It is what it is. And Delilah, the one who had his heart, was paid and pressured by the Philistines. They each promised to give her 1,000 coins of silver each to find out the secret of his strength. And she began to pressure Samson for the secret of his strength. They knew that it was supernatural. They knew that there was something about him that was not human. Can you relate? Can you relate to ever getting careless? Have you ever gotten careless? No, maybe you were once dedicated and invested and you did your best and you woke up early and you dressed up nice. And you went to do that thing that you were called to do. And now, spiritually, I'm speaking spiritually now, you don't dress up anymore before God. You don't dress up anymore before your calling. You're just kind of going through the motions, wearing sweatpants, so to speak. Again, I'm speaking spiritually because I hear tracksuits are coming back. So if you can pull them off, good on you. I can't. You know, it used to be special to you But now it's just the thing you do. You know, it used to be that Sunday mornings were the thing. You went to connect to God, and it was a place for you to worship, and your heart was devoted to God. But now it's just something that we do as a family. It's for the kids, or it's for my wife, or it's for my husband. You know, and I just, that's what we do on Sundays if we don't have anything better to do. That's what we do. It's just the thing you do. You know, in the beginning, you knew God called you to start that business. God gave you an idea, and you knew you couldn't do it without Him. You knew that it was way too big for your own talent, for your own ability, for your own relationship. It was way too big. So you relied on Him. You were aware of Him in your life. But now, you know, you've gotten used to His favor. You've gotten used to it, and you're beginning to think that, you know, it's maybe you are that good. Maybe you are that strong. Maybe it is your talent that got you there. It's your hustle that has given you favor. Even the things that you can't explain, the connections that you can explain somehow, there's an aura, something about you that makes you better. I don't know if you've been there, but it's so easy to get there. It's so easy to get used to the thing that has given you favor over a long period of time. And then we don't realize when the Delilahs walk in our life. And Delilah kept pressing. After three times of Delilah asking Samson for the source of his strength and him toying with her, giving him a different answer, and her trying him on it, one of the times he said, if you tie me with really brand new ropes, I'm not going to be able to break it. And she tied him. And he broke off. And he didn't realize, why. Wait, what are you doing here? Why are you trying to take my strength away? He didn't think that way. He just, whenever she pressed him, he came up with a different answer. But after three times, on the fourth time, he finally broke down. He told her, hey, listen, it's my hair. I've never cut it. I have never cut my hair. I am a Nazirite. If I ever cut my hair, I'll be as weak as the next fellow. And just as the three times before, Delilah tested his theory. She got Samson to fall asleep on her lap. She called a man to shave his head when he was asleep. Friends, the enemy will make a move on you. Not when you're strong and aware. Not when you realize what's happening. He will come for you when you fall asleep, thinking that you're safe. That's what happened to Samson. He thought he was safe. And that moment is followed by one of the most heartbreaking texts in scriptures, in my opinion. Judges chapter 16, verse 20 and 21 say this, and she, Delilah, said, the Philistines are upon you, Samson. And he awoke from his sleep and said, I will go out as at other times and shake myself free. And here it comes. But he did not know that the Lord had left him. Wow. He did not realize that the presence of God was gone. And the Philistines seized him and gouged out his eyes and brought him down to Gaza and bound him with bronze shackles. Samson was so intoxicated by the enemy. He was so enamored, so oblivious, that he was unaware that the presence of God was no longer with him. Unaware. He didn't even notice that the presence of God left him. Are you aware of the presence of God in your life? Do you wake up each morning aware of His presence? Aware that He's with you? Aware that He's the breath in your lungs? Aware that He has given you power to do what you do? That He has given you intelligence and sophistication to fulfill the purpose that He has for you? To go to your job or your place of study or whatever your occupation is and excel in that? Are you aware of His absence? Are you aware when something happens in your life and the presence of God is no longer there? Can you tell the difference? You know, the scripture talks about the chaff. That the wicked are like the chaff. You know what the chaff is? The chaff is the casing of the grain. When the grain is in the blade, is before the grain is extracted from the blade, it exists in the chaff. The chaff envelops the grain. It looks like the grain. It smells like the grain, but it's not the grain. And while it's attached to the plant, the chaff is just there doing its job of protecting the grain. But when the grain matures and the grain is extracted from the plant, what falls from the grain is what they call the chaff. The casing falls to the ground and still has the shape of the grain. Still kind of looks like might have the grain inside. It smells like the grain, but it's useless. Psalm 1 is saying that the wicked are like the chaff that the wind blows away. The wicked, it's a phony way to live. It's irrelevant. It's disposable. And I want you to understand something really powerful about the scripture, about the story of Samson and Psalm 1. And I pray that this revelation will stay with you forever. See, scripture says in Habakkuk chapter 2, verse 4, that the righteous shall live by faith. And it also says in Romans chapter 1, verses 16 and 17, that I am not ashamed of the gospel, for it is the power of God for the salvation of everyone who believes, to the Jew first and also the Greek. For it is in the righteousness of God, for in it the righteousness of God is revealed from faith for faith, as it is written, the righteous shall live by faith. Righteousness comes from God. And how is the righteousness of God revealed? From faith. For faith. Here's the scripture in Hebrews chapter 10, verse 38. It says, but my righteous one shall live by faith, and if he shrinks back, my soul has no pleasure in him. A little later it says that without faith it is impossible to please him. My righteous shall live by faith, and if he shrinks back, my soul has no pleasure in him. Friends, when Adam and Eve ate from the fruit God told them not to eat, they were taking their faith off of God. Every day they chose not to eat from that fruit was a day that they were saying, by faith, God, I trust you. What you told me, what you directed me, how you directed me to live, that's how I'm going to live. From the beginning, we are directed to live by faith. You know, the cowardly in the scripture in Revelations, that strong scripture in Revelations, the faithless, the detestable, the murderers, the sexually immoral, sorcerers, idolaters, and all liars. Those are the people who took their faith away from God. Who decided to live by their own desires. And Samson. You know, his commitment to not cut his hair was a commitment of faith. For as long as he was aware that he could not cut his hair, he was saying, God, I trust you. My strength comes from you. This is my commitment to you. While Samson kept his faith in God, God not only gave him strength, but God covered his weaknesses. Now see, this is not just about what we can get. Our strength is that the fact that we all have weaknesses, we are aware of them. But putting your faith in God not only gives you strength for the battle, but God's grace covers your weaknesses. Samson, his weaknesses were evident. But as long as he kept his faith in God, even when all those women betrayed him, he was still victorious. Even in his weaknesses, he was victorious. In his weakness, he still overcame. But it was the moment when he began to place his faith in Delilah. When he trusted Delilah with his destiny. When he was enamored and so in love that he gave up his commitment to the Lord, that he became like the chaff. See, Psalm 1, this psalm that we've been confessing each and every week, is not just a psalm about conduct. You can think it's about conduct. And part of it, it is. And part of it, it is. But it's not simply conduct for conduct's sake. It's a psalm of faith. Because faith always precedes conduct. It's what drives our conduct. And the reason why faith in God through Christ is a salvation for everyone who believes, as we read, it's because if you don't place your faith in God, you'll place it in idols. If you don't place your faith in God, you'll place it in men, you'll place it in women. If you don't place your faith in God, you'll place it in the serpents in the garden of life. Just like in Genesis, if you don't place your faith in God, you'll place it in money like Delilah did. If you don't place your faith in God, you'll place it in institutions and ideologies and communities and identities and ideas. And that's why our culture is in despair, because none of those things can sustain our faith. They can try to steal our faith, but they cannot sustain our faith. Eventually, every single one of those things will break down and leave us in despair. Think about our community. We live in the wealthiest country in the world, and we're among the most depressed and most anxious. We have the best healthcare technology in the world, by none. We lead in medical innovation and technology, yet when you score countries for chronic diseases, according to a study done in 2022, obesity, overall health per capita, we rank in number 69 in the world. We are the United States, but it feels like we're getting more and more divided in every social and cultural issue, doesn't it? There's a sense that society is breaking down. And I want to propose to you today that our crisis is not a crisis of anything other than a crisis of faith. Faith is breaking down. Faith in every single institution. And therefore, faith as a society. And most of us today are either faithless or we're placing our faith in things that cannot sustain it. And so we live frustrated, hopeless. Because the output, it's so great. But we can't get the return. The expected return. Now, I love that the life of Samson did not end right there. You know, in Judges, it says that, chapter 16, verse 22, it says, the hair of his head began to grow again after it had been shaved. It means that Samson repented. It means that he began to put his faith in God again. And I believe God is calling every single one of us today to renew our faith. You know, if you walked in through these doors unaware of the presence of God, if you walked through these doors today confused about where your faith lies, maybe indifferent about God and kind of like, you know, I'm just here. I think today is a marking moment, and we're going to have a moment together here. Because I believe God is calling us to put our faith in Him unequivocally. unashamedly to cast our faith upon the Lord and to say, God, where else would I go but you? And recommit to him. Do you want to do that today?
Thank you for listening today. If you have a prayer request, a question about faith, or would like to find out more information, visit us at connectcommunity.org. Don't forget to subscribe and share. See you next time.